You're watching Press TV. We're going to take you live now to Brussels. President Barack Obama alongside the European Commission and European Council President.
So it's good to finally meet the presidents of the European Union at the European Union. As I've said before, Europe is America's closest partner. Europe, including the European Union, is the cornerstone of our engagement around the globe. We are more secure, and we are more prosperous. The world is safer and more just when Europe and America stand as one. And later today, I look forward to speaking to the young people from across Europe about how we can sustain the values and ideals that are at the heart of our partnership. As Presidents Van Rompuy and Barroso just mentioned, our work today touched on a full range of issues where we work together. We agreed to step up our efforts to boost growth and job creation on both sides of the Atlantic, and that includes working to conclude a transatlantic trade and investment partnership. And let me add, once we have a trade agreement in place, export licenses for projects for liquefied natural gas destined to Europe would be much easier, something that's obviously relevant in today's geopolitical climate. We reviewed our negotiations with Iran, which I believe give us the opportunity to peacefully resolve the world's concerns with the Iranian nuclear program. We pledged to sustain our support for the effort to eliminate Syria's chemical weapons, even as we work to deliver humanitarian relief to the Syrian people. And we discussed a number of global challenges, including the desire to step up our cooperation with the Asia-Pacific region and our commitment to a new global agreement to combat climate change. Obviously, much of our focus today was on the situation in Ukraine. Russia's actions in Ukraine aren't just about one country. They're about the kind of Europe and the kind of world that we live in. The European project was born from the ashes of two world wars, and the United States has long supported European integration as a force for peace and for prosperity. And Europe's progress rests on basic principles, including respect for international law, as well as the sovereignty and territorial integrity of nations. That's what Russia violated with its military action against Ukraine. The United States and Europe stand united on this issue. We're united in our support for Ukraine and for the need to provide economic assistance to help stabilize its economy. We're united in our commitment to Europe's security. We're united in our determination to isolate Russia and impose costs for Russia's actions. Every step of the way, I've coordinated closely with our allies and partners in Europe, and I want to thank Presidents Van Rompuy and Barroso for the leadership they've shown during this difficult time. I want to commend the EU for the important steps taken already to make sure Russia feels the costs of its behavior in Ukraine by implementing visa bans and freezing assets and designating individuals for sanctions, as well as canceling a number of engagements with Russia, and making it clear that if Russia stays on its current course, the consequences for the Russian economy will continue to grow. Of course, all this comes atop the measures and sanctions that the United States and others around the world are imposing on Russia. And taken together, they're the most significant sanctions Russia has faced since the end of the Cold War. Moreover, Russia stands alone. Russia stood alone when trying to defend its actions at the UN Security Council. The 28 members of the European Union are united. The 28 members of NATO are united. Every member of the G7 has imposed sanctions on Russia, as we announced on Monday. And the G7 will meet here in Brussels in June without Russia. So if anyone in the Russian leadership thought the world wouldn't care about their actions in Ukraine, or that they could drive a wedge between the European Union and the United States, they clearly miscalculated. As I've said repeatedly and was mentioned by both Presidents Van Rompuy and Barroso, there is still a way for Russia to work with Ukraine and the international community to de-escalate the situation through diplomacy. That's the only way that the issue will be resolved. If Russia continues on its current course, however, the isolation will deepen. Sanctions will increase, and there will be growing consequences for the Russian economy. And this reflects the enduring commitment to the goal that has brought Europe and the United States together for decades, a Europe that is whole and free and at peace. In closing, I just want to say to Presidents Van Rompuy and Barroso, as you prepare to conclude your tenures later this year, thank you for all the outstanding work that you've been able to do together. We have gone through some very rocky waters. We've persevered through some very difficult economic times. But throughout this process, we've been able to deepen the ties between the European Union and the United States. We've been able to advance the cause of security and human dignity around the world. I'm personally grateful to both of you for your leadership as well as your friendship, and most importantly, for the purposes of our countries that we represent here today, your dedication to the transatlantic relationship. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your statement, President Obama. Now there is time for two questions. Thank you for your kind understanding. Please state your name at the media you are presenting before addressing your question. Yes, sir? Yes?
Christian Böhmer, German press agency, DPA. Good afternoon. I have one question for the Presidents Obama, Barroso and Van Rompuy. First is on Russia and Ukraine. Given that the U.S. Has less to lose from economic sanctions against Russia, would it be appropriate to envisage support for European allies, for example, in the realm of energy? Second, you mentioned all three, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. A lot of citizens have concerns. They fear that standards for environment protection or consumer protection might be at stake. How do you want to convince these citizens? Thank you very much.
With respect to sanctions, so far what we've seen is excellent coordination between the United States and Europe. I think on both sides of the Atlantic there was recognition that in the initial incursion into Crimea, we had to take some very specific steps, and we did, identifying individuals that were in part responsible for those actions. When the Russian government made the decision to annex Crimea after a referendum that nobody outside of Russia, I think, could take seriously, we then heightened those sanctions, again in coordination. What we're now doing is coordinating around the potential for additional, deeper sanctions should Russia move forward and engage in further incursions into Ukraine. And we recognize that in order for Russia to feel the brunt, the impact of these sanctions, that it will have some impact on the global economy as well as on all the countries that are represented here today. And we're mindful that that's going to be different not just between the United States and Europe, but also among different countries inside of Europe, some of whom are more dependent, for example, on energy from Russia than others are. So we're taking all of this into account. I think energy is obviously a central focus of our efforts, and we have to consider very, very strongly. This entire event, I think, has pointed to the need for Europe to look at how it can further diversify its energy sources. And the United States is blessed with some additional energy sources that have been developed in part because of new technologies. And we've already licensed, authorized the export of as much natural gas each day as Europe uses each day. But it's going into the open market. It's not targeted directly. It's going through private companies who get these licenses, and they make decisions on the world market about where that energy is going to be sold. The question is whether through our energy ministers and at the highest levels, we're able to find ways in which we can accelerate this process of diversification. And this is something we're very much committed to. We think it would be good for Europe, We think it would be good for the United States. It's not something that can happen overnight. But what I think this entire crisis has pointed to is the need for us to get moving now with a sense of urgency. And our energy ministers are committed to doing that. That was their assignment coming out of the G7 meeting. Just on the issue of TTIP very briefly, we already do enormous trade, and there's enormous direct investment between the United States and Europe. We account for a big chunk of the world economy in our economic relations. That's not going to change. I think that our publics, both in Europe and the United States, have legitimate questions when it comes to trade deals as to whether or not it's going to benefit their countries over the long term, and can we make sure that hard-won victories around consumer protection or environmental protection are preserved as opposed to weakened? That's something that's of concern in the United States, as it is here. Here's what I can tell you as these negotiations proceed. I have fought my entire political career and as president to strengthen consumer protections. I have no intention of signing legislation that would weaken those protections. I fought throughout my political career and am fighting as we speak to strengthen environmental protections in the United States. So I have no interest in signing a trade agreement that weakens environmental standards. And so I think that there's been a lot of publicity and speculation about what might be or could be, or is this provision potentially used by corporations to, in some fashion weaken some of these protections or encroach on sovereign decisions that are made. And I would just caution everybody to wait until they actually see what has been negotiated before they engage in all these speculations. I think there has generally been suspicion in some quarters around trade. Some of those suspicions are unjustified. Some of them reflect old models of trade agreements that have been updated. But what I can say for certain is that because of the trading relationship between the United States and Europe, we've created millions of jobs on both sides of the Atlantic, and growth and prosperity has advanced. There is a way of doing this right that will help us make sure that we remain at the cutting edge of innovation and growth and development. There are bad ways of doing trade agreements as well, and ultimately all of these things will have to be subjected to scrutiny in the light of day, but no point in getting excited about potential provisions in trade agreements that haven't been drafted yet. There will be plenty of time to criticize trade agreements when they're actually put before the public, but I guarantee you we're going to be working hard to make sure that environmental protections, consumer protections that are already in place, that those are strengthened. And I shared with President Van Rompuy and Barroso the fact that part of the suspicion about trade is whether globalization is benefiting everybody as opposed to just those at the top and some small segments of our economies, or large corporations as opposed to small and medium-sized businesses. I think it is important for us as leaders to ensure that trade is helping folks at the bottom and folks in the middle, and broad-based